Hi, this is Leah.
And this is Channing.
And you've reached Vessel, Art is a Doorway.
Welcome to episode 22. Hi, everyone. We want to thank you so much for being with us here at Vessel Art is a Doorway. Today, we have a real treat for you. We have the pleasure of interviewing Philippa Hughes.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you too much. We want you guys to just get right into the discussion. But one of the beautiful things about what she does is she helps people build relationships by using art to help them to have conversations that they normally wouldn't have with each other.
So let's listen in to this interview with the wonderful Philippa Hughes. Well, audience, we have a treat for you. Today, we are with the lovely Philippa Hughes. Philippa, she describes herself as a social sculptor and creative strategist, and I think you're really going to enjoy this episode as she explains what that means. I have no idea what a social sculptor is. As a sculptor, I enjoy creating things from clay, but I'm going to really enjoy listening into your side of this, and especially when it comes to the art realm. Thank you so much, Philippa, for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to chat with y'all.
Yeah. Audience, she's such a lovely person. Maybe you've seen Philippa in some things like, for instance, TEDx. You may have seen her in those things. You may have seen her speak in different platforms. But today, we just feel so privileged to have her with us. So let's just jump right into the discussion today. Philippa, a lot of times when we get into our discussions, we like to understand where our guests are coming from, how they've been able to get into the position that they are in today, or a little bit about your background. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you come from?
Okay, I'll try not to tell you my whole life story.
Bring it on.
Just the relevant parts. But, I live in Washington, D.C., and I've been here a long time, but I actually grew up in Richmond, Virginia, which, is only like a couple hours away. So it's geographically close, but it is, a whole different world. It's truly, the former capital of the Confederacy. And I think that growing up in a place like that really informed who I am. Like the symbols that I saw all around me. My brother and I were the only Asian kids in our school growing up. And, it was a very black and white world, literally kind of a self-segregated world. And so, growing up in that environment has totally shaped my worldview in so many different ways. And like, I didn't even have an Asian friend until I went to college because there were none, there weren't any around me. And even then, I kind of avoided, for various reasons, which we can chat about too. But anyway, so I think that, talking about where a person grew up and comes from, like, that's just so relevant to who you are. And it's, like I said, it shaped so many of the decisions that I've made throughout my life and has been part of like the sort of learning experience and evolution of who I am. So here we are.
Yeah. So from Richmond, Virginia to DC now, I know you must be in a very interesting state of affairs right now that's going on in DC, wouldn't you imagine?
Oh my gosh, no kidding. I've been so stressed and I didn't realize how stressed I was until the day of the inauguration when Kamala took the oath and then Biden took the oath. And it just kind of all came out. Like, it just was this huge release. Oh, and, and you're right. Like when you're this close to, I can walk around and see the Capitol all the time and the White House. Like I take that walk a lot and just it's right in my face all the time. There's no way to avoid it. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, listeners, we're recording this a few weeks after the riots at the Capitol. So Philippa, she just kind of has that firsthand experience of being in the or close by that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had gone down to Atlanta to help with the polls when, for the Senate runoff with Ossoff and Warnock. And so that was on January 5th. And so in the morning of January 6th, I was flying back And as I was landing, everybody on the plane, you know, their phones were going off, like buzzing. And it were these warnings, you know, about what was happening. And, you know, it's just very jarring. And then, you know, I get in a cab and they're like, oh, we have to like go the way long way around to get home, you know, because all the streets were closed. I mean, it was really terrifying, like, because you don't know, like, it could, you know, it was terrible, but it could have been even worse. But how are we supposed to know? So yeah, it is kind of weird to be living so close to that.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, as you were describing landing on your airplane, like seeing all those people at the White House from the window. That, I mean, if you could just imagine the sheer state that people are in.
Yeah, I mean, and I have to admit, you know, I've done a lot of protesting and going to marches and rallies over the last 4 years. So I have to admit, part of me almost like was like, I'm getting on the metro and I'm heading over there. Like, I got to go over and, you know, do something. I don't know what it is, but I got to do something. And I was like, oh, I don't know. They might have guns and stuff. I better just go home.
Yeah. But now, so you moved to DC. Now tell us a little bit about your background when it comes to how you entered into the art realm, because from before we hit the record button, you told us that you had a little bit of legal experience in your background as well. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. When I moved to DC, I was a lawyer. And so I came here as a lawyer. I've been practicing law for a few years. And I really liked going to law school, which is really weird, but I never liked practicing law. So I got here and I was just so bored, like so bored. You know, I've always been interested in the arts. I've always, you know, always had subscriptions to plays and gone to music, you know, all the things. But when I think one way to kind of help with the boredom was I just started going to more arts events. I'd go to like 3 or 4 openings a night on the weekends, you know, and just, I really started immersing myself in the DC art scene. And then then I just kind of like even started weaving my way even closer, even deeper in by I started hosting these little salons at my house and would have like artists come and talk about their art and invite people and we'd drink wine, you know, like it was like Gertrude Stein or something. Mm-hmm. So it kind of started a little bit selfishly. Like I wanted to be around artists. And, you know, I always thought that when I was around artists, I felt better about the world. I loved the conversations, but that it was just like one thing just kept leading to another thing. And, you know, I will say that I just was lucky enough and privileged enough to be able to actually say, take time off from my legal job. And just, you know, basically I was like, I'm just going to take a year off and see if I can make a go of it. And it wasn't exactly a huge, you know, bang up success after a year, but I was like, that's still better than going back to law. Like this, even though I'm still kind of struggling at the time, it's still better than sitting in a law office.
Now, thinking back, what was your first memory of art?
I mean, I just have so many. But I will say that, you know, one of the, this is a first memory, but it's a significant memory that from early on when it was sort of like the very first like real art piece that I'd ever bought. Before that, I'd bought prints and, you know, not that those aren't real, but, you know, they were prints, you know, photographs, things like that. But like the first sort of painting that was an original art piece, I remember sitting there in this, there were such good salespeople too. Like they had this room in the back and they took the painting off the wall and stuck it on this, like there was a couch. It was set up like a living room so that, you know, clearly they were trying to get you to be able to envision it in your own house, you know? And I remember just sitting there and they'd bring me drinks and, you know, like I felt like so adult and like I was, you know, starting a real collection, you know, like I did little air quotes there. But, you know, and it was the most money that I'd ever spent on art before. And I just think back to that moment and that it's a piece that I still love dearly and not just for sentimental reasons, like it's a really beautiful piece of art, but it was the beginning of my art collection in a way, like the turning point of like, ah, I get why people collect art now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we had a guest on several weeks ago, Tyrone Vincent. And he mentioned something, I never forget it. He mentioned how anyone can become, you know, a true art collector. Because a lot of times when people, when they think about a collection of art, they may think about the Rothschilds or the, you know, some wealthy family. But really, it just seems like any of us, you know, if we have a selection of art, yeah, we're art collectors. I know I collect music. I collect I collect a lot of my art. And I enjoy giving it to others as well. Yeah, being an art collector is not really like a taboo subject. Wouldn't you agree? Or how do you feel about that?
I totally agree. And I hate that people, when they hear art collector, they think of that hoity-toity, you know, kind of person. And, you know, I have to admit, like, there are people out there who propagate that idea. And I was like, come on, seriously, like, not only can anybody be an art collector, but, you know, what I really love about collecting art at like lower prices, basically, is that, you know, in a way you're helping an artist's career. Whether that piece of art ever, and it probably won't become a valuable piece of art. You know, you can't buy art thinking, oh my gosh, like I'm investing in this work of art because someday this piece of art could be valuable. I think about it as like, I'm investing in the artist to help that artist continue their career because you've like financially helped them. And all the better if you actually love the piece of art too, like awesome. Anyway, so even at any level that you can support artists in that way, I think is so, so important.
So would you say that art has had a tremendous impact on your life?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, I hate to be so kind of hokey about it, but like art literally, you know, changed my life. Like it is one of the most defining things of my life.
So what are one or two of your favorite art pieces that you own, and what do you enjoy about just living with them on a daily basis?
I mean, that's just such an impossible question to answer, you know, like that thing where like, you can't pick your favorite child, you know, whatever. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and say that, you know, one thing that I love about my collection is that on almost every wall in my home is a mural that was done by an artist, you know, local artists, different artists. And I just love, like, I'm looking around and I realize that almost, in fact, every single piece, every mural that is in my house, I didn't say to the artist, hey, I want you to do this. I knew their work and I said, hey, here's a wall, do what you want with it. And in every case, I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked a little bit about is the fact that you describe yourself as a social sculptor. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means to you?
Yeah. You know, I'm still kind of evolving and, you know, thinking about what that does actually mean, but I actually didn't make that up. I stole the idea from an artist named Joseph Beuys. He called himself a social sculptor, and he said that he would basically sculpt these spaces, social spaces, in which it was designed for people to interact and form relationships, and that the art piece would not be complete until the relationship was formed. And so I'm really interested in relationship building. And so that's why, you know, when I read that description of what a social sculptor was, I was like, oh yeah, like that's exactly what I'm interested in. And he takes it a step further and says that those relationships have to lead to making society better. And so, you know, I think that was his way of saying, you know, talking about art as a social practice, as activism, basically. You know, I think, you know, he was working most in like the 60s and 70s. I often think about, I want to create, you know, relationships are the most important thing to me, but to what end? They must lead toward something, you know, something that makes the world better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. Joseph Beuys, mm-hmm. We'll make sure that we have Joseph or a link to some of his work in the description of the show's notes, audience, if you're interested in seeing some of that. Now, also, we heard that you're described as a cultural strategist. Now, educate us a little bit about what that means.
All right. I'm going to be like super honest with you. I have to admit, I was like, I don't want to have like a normal title, you know, I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, and so I was like kind of brainstorming about what can I call myself? Like, I'm really interested, you know, in not just, you know, art, but in like, how do we shape our culture? And so, you know, that's where that came from. But I have to admit, like, I added on the word strategist because, you know, we have to make money. And so that seems like a thing that people will pay you to do is to strategize. You know, so it sort of sounds like you're a consultant, you know, consultants make money, but artists, they don't make any money.
Well, all right. So thinking about that, tell us a little bit about more of some of the things that you do. And it's kind of interesting too, because we talked a little bit about you being a lawyer, and it kind of seems like, I feel like, I don't know, do you find it connects a little bit or what do you think from your perspective?
Yeah, actually, I think it connects like perfectly in a lot of ways. The thing about, you know, earlier I was saying that I really like law school. Part of the reason why I really like it is because what they teach you, I mean, sure, you like go through case law, yada, yada, yada. But really what they're teaching you is how to solve problems, how to identify the problem and then solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And so I think that skill of knowing how to identify problems and solve problems has helped me throughout my life. And so I think that, you know, when I think about social justice, when I think about activism and art as a social practice, I think about like, it's about problem solving. And so I think that's where it kind of connects, you know, that I'm so glad that I have that background, even though I never want to go do that again. Cause you know, it really has helped me today. So yeah, anyway, I do, but I've evolved, I am always trying to learn. Like, I don't always want us to sit on my laurels and say, well, this is what I do now. Like, I always want to be adding and being in growing.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's kind of, it's interesting talking to artists from different backgrounds. And I think that's one of a common thread is that the whole problem solving thing. And I think that's something that when people may look at a piece of art, or maybe they experience it, maybe they don't think about that particular artist designing a situation as, you know, from a standpoint of problem solving. And that's one of the beautiful things about, I love what you do as well, as we're going to talk about, go into more detail as to how you strategize or how you create a situation to have people be able to build these types of relationships.
Yeah, I think I love the idea of artists as problem solvers. I like that direction a lot.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit. You said that you've been able to organize events dealing with the theme of art. What have been some of your favorite events that you've had the pleasure of working on over the years?
Yeah, a lot, actually. But, you know, one of my favorite things that I did several years in a row was a collaboration with the National Cherry Blossom Festival, which is a totally big deal here in DC. I mean, they have, you know, cherry blossom festivals around the world, but it's pretty big here. And, but it had gotten to the point where it was kind of geared toward kind of older people and, you know, families and things, and they wanted to reach younger audiences. And so long story short is I came up with this idea for, well, I wanted to call it Cherry Bomb, but they thought that was too incendiary. So I came up with this idea called Cherry Blast. And, you know, it's not like it was some revolutionary idea, but for DC, it kind of was at the time, several years ago, where basically each year I would find an abandoned space or a warehouse or something like that and transform it into like just something else, and just fill it with performance artists and video. And one year I just told this whole group of graffiti artists, like, here's some walls and here's a bunch of paint, like, just go to work, you know, go to town, you know, just being able to have complete creative expression without limits. was sort of what Cherry Blast was all about. And so that, I don't know, I really miss being able to do things like that. You know, I mean, like, you know, a couple thousand people would come through. Like, it was just so much energy. And that's, and to me, and part of the reason why I think I loved it so much was it was sort of the juxtaposition of that kind of creative energy in the middle of a city that isn't really known for its creative energy. You know, DC does kind of rightfully have this reputation for being kind of square and, you know, I don't, you know, like khaki pants and stuff like that. It was just really cool to see that, like, people are yearning for that kind of creativity and arts in their life, no matter how square they are. Like, that's just part of being human. So I really miss being able to do that.
Yeah, I know, especially right, you know, right now, hopefully we'll get back. We'll get back to, you know, after COVID and everything's over, we'll get back to that lifestyle again. One of the things that I really love about what you're describing too, is that I'm just finding that more and more businesses and associations, because of being able to communicate like the way you are and being able to, I don't know, maybe with social media and everything, I think businesses are starting to realize the value of including artists in on problem solving things, or like what you said, they wanted to get more young people involved. And so they talk to you and you're able to kind of figure out that a solution that's out of the box that maybe they wouldn't necessarily come to. And it's pretty amazing to see how you put that together.
Yeah. You know, I wish businesses would do that more though, you know, and in fact, I've been thinking about, you know, they're definitely been rumblings around this idea of having a cabinet level position as like a minister of arts, you know, basically the equivalent of something like that at the cabinet level. Like, I feel like a lot too often there's a lot of talk about like how important the arts are, and, you know, we have to incorporate that into policy and work. But then when it gets right down to it, a lot of times it's just very superficial inclusion. And that's, I really wish we could break through that. Like, if you really think it's that important, like, let's put some real money behind it. Let's actually put like a person in a position of power who cares about the arts. So I think we have a long way to go, but we're getting there. Mm-hmm,
definitely. And that's one of the reasons why we felt so compelled with this podcast, is because people know that the art's important, but they don't know why. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I should say this because this is the right thing to say, but I don't really know the facts as to why. So then talking to people like yourself, where we're showing specifically how you approach a problem, how you solve the problem, how specifically it brings people together and strengthens relationships, and this circumstance with what you do is really beautiful. And then we've talked to people and it just domino effects to the economics and, you know, all kinds of other things.
Yeah. Well, and you know that I work on this project called Looking for America, which is about depolarizing our country. And so, I mean, I feel like, and I use art as a specific way to bring people together into these conversations that they might not normally, they probably refuse to have. and, you know, so I feel like that is a very concrete way in which we, you know, I am using art to form relationships that matter. And so, you know, I will say that it's going to be a long, slow road. I mean, it's not like we're going to depolarize the country in a, you know, even with, you know, a few dinners, like with conversation and art, like it's going to take years, but art is definitely a way to bring that framework together.
Yeah, let's just hit the rewind button a little bit here, audience. Now, she mentioned a project that she's been working on called Looking for America. Now, break that down for us. Exactly what is that?
So I have to back up to tell you a little context for that. After the 2016 election, when I was very upset, like many people, you know, I decided that I just didn't understand what happened. And so I invited some Trump voters over to my house for dinner. And I wasn't at the time thinking, oh, this is going to be a big project. Like, I just was genuinely curious, like, what the heck? And I just kept doing that over and over until like for a couple of years, until I, like, long story short, as I essentially teamed up with this organization that funded me being able to travel around the country, curating art shows in different communities with local artists, asking them, what does it mean to be American in your community? And then organizing much larger dinners with people from across the political spectrum to answer that same question and to have conversations. And so that's basically all I was doing for like the year leading up to the pandemic, just traveling around the country doing it. It was so amazing to sort of see our own country. Like, you know, like I really like to travel a lot, and I realized I don't travel around my own country that much. That was so great. And then the pandemic, you know, obviously cut that off, but I've tried to continue doing that over Zoom, and which has been great. And now we are gearing up again to figure out like how do we use what we learned having these Zoom conversations while also organizing again for in-person meetings, because like at the end of the day, we do need in-person meetings. Like that's the best way to break through our divides. So I'm excited to see what happens, you know, as we progress through the year.
That's great. You know, we're going to put a link to the Looking for America project as well in the notes. So a little bit more homework for your audience, but I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Now, could you tell us a little bit about some of the artists that you've selected to work with? How do you actually take part when it comes to the selection of artists and other people you work with?
You know, that's a tough question because a lot of times, you know, okay, I've established that I'm an art collector, but actually I think in a way I'm a collector of artists. Like I just love being around artists and like the artist mind so much. So I just have an array of artists in my life. And I gotta be honest, like a lot of times when I'm thinking about, you know, a project, especially in DC, if I'm doing a project in DC, I kind of just look to my friends who I feel like I've picked the best artists to be my friends. the DC art scene is kind of smallish. So I kind of know pretty much who's out there. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard because there's so many that I love, you know? And so it's just because I picked this person doesn't mean I don't love that person. You know what I mean? When we were when I was curating art shows in other communities, I would team up with a local curator so that, you know, we work together, because obviously I wouldn't necessarily know who's in each place in each community. It's really, really important to have sort of boots on the ground and be connected to somebody who really understands a community. Like, what do I know about? We went as far as Anchorage, Alaska. What do I know about Anchorage, Alaska? Like, you know, it's not up to me to say what's important to a person in Anchorage. Because, you know, by selecting art and artists, you're kind of making a statement of who you think is important. So anyway, so many layers to that.
Yeah, sure. Now, when you approach putting together the events, how do you, like, just for example, one of the things when I approach my art, I may have like a state of mind or an emotion, and then I work backwards from that. Do you approach that when you put together the events? Because it kind of made me think of that even when you were talking about the different artists that you choose. Like if you know that it's going to be a very sensitive conversation, does that make defect the people that you choose or the art that you choose to have in that those circumstances?
You know, that is such a good question. I mean, you know, I really, oh gosh, each, you know, saying each community has its own sort of character to it. And so it's really important to spend a lot of time thinking about what this community is and talking to the people in the community and like not infusing too much of what I want, but like what the community wants. And really it's hard because it's almost impossible to not, you know, have some of your perspective. I mean, that's just human nature. But really, really spending more time thinking about who's involved, who's the audience, and then picking artists, not trying to build. I try not to come in with a theme first. Like I try to draw the theme out from, you know, what the community is, what the circumstances are, you know. But I will say with the Looking for America project, our theme was, what does it mean to be American? But we based the selection around who was in the community.
Now, what have you found anything in your experience that is the best at getting to like the core of maybe what people want? Because sometimes, like you said, like even when it comes to like mural creation and things like that, like you have to take the community into, you know, that you have to take their opinions and how they feel, and because this is going to be in their community. So you want to make it something that's going to, you know, tug at their heartstrings or make them feel like they're being represented. What kind of things have you found to really get to the heart?
Yeah, gosh, you know, it's kind of such a balance though, using murals as an example, because like I've worked with artists and doing community murals, and I absolutely want the community input, but also you want the artist to be able to actually do their art, which at some level doesn't really need the community input, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, there is that sort of balance in trying to figure out, you know, what to do. So anyway, you know, one of the things that I really have been thinking more and more, especially since I started doing these dinners with people from across the political spectrum, is what does, you know, how to have a good conversation. And one of the key things that I've realized over the last 4 years is people are really bad at listening. And so that was a long way of sort of answering your question of saying listening. And that's how we figure out what the themes are and how to draw people out. And so I have really tried to, for myself, improve my own listening skills. And in trying to do that, honestly, I realized so few people are good listeners. It's so interesting. They think they are. I was so fascinated. Like, so many people think they're like good conversationalists because they're saying a lot of things. But, you know, a good conversation isn't just you saying a lot of things, as we know. But I don't know. Right?
No, you're absolutely right. That totally makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find it really intriguing that you said that you enjoy being around the artist's mind, because allowing the artist to get a chance to speak is so important. We were watching a documentary recently, and they were talking about how there was a journalist who was giving homage to Kobe Bryant all throughout the United States, you know, because there's been so many murals of Kobe and his beautiful daughter. And he went to make a documentary of all of these murals, but there was no consideration to the actual artists, I felt, that actually created these murals. You know, it seems like there's a lot of feedback to actually the institutions or maybe the businesses, but sometimes the artists themselves really get overlooked. And that's one of the things I really appreciate, you know, from what you said, you know, getting into the artist's mind.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I'm a collector of artists. And, you know, I have to admit, like, there've definitely been times when I bought art pieces, not because I love the artwork, but because I just love the artist and what the artist said about their work. And so, it's so important to have those conversations with artists, because, you know, I've so much to say.
Please rant.
I mean, I love art. I have lots of art objects. You know, we're doing this on Zoom and you can see like all this stuff behind me, and I love art objects, but I don't want people to have a passive experience of art. Like, you know, you go and you're like, look at the thing silently, and then you quietly, you know, scurry on to the next piece of art, and it's like this sort of lonely experience. And I think there's some, you know, I'm not saying there's no value in that at all, but I think that when you can layer a conversation with the actual artist and really dive into ideas, like I'm really interested in ideas, that's for me when the art comes alive and just takes on vast new meanings.
That is phenomenal. And when we think about the impact that it has on the artist who's actually participating in these events, it's so fundamental. Are you familiar with Theaster Gates?
Oh yeah. Love.
Yeah.
Love.
Who isn't, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, we love Theaster. We got a chance to meet him a few years ago at one of his art shows. But what do you think the impact is when you see events like what you're doing, what Theaster's doing, getting artists, getting musicians together, the energy being created? What do you think that the type of impact that it has on the artists and the people or the art or even the audience, what do you think is the impact that it has on them?
Yeah. In fact, I have to admit, like, I started a little sort of collection because, you know, sometimes when you most, in fact, I'll say most of the time when I'm organizing stuff like that, I get very little real feedback other than, oh my God, that was so fun, you know, other than that. But like, I rarely get that this changed me in some way or, you know, whatever. And so I did start this little collection of like emails or things that people would say to me. Like, one of my favorite things very early on was a woman who said she started collecting art because of an event that she came to that I had organized. Like, she had never thought of herself as an art collector. So kind of, again, going back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, like, she didn't know that she could be an art collector. And I helped her see that through like an accessible event where it wasn't, you know, air quotes, hoity toity. So, you know, that, I don't know, I think about that a lot. And then to like more recently, I think about the Looking for America events where people have had conversations with their political opposites that they would have never had, but for the fact that I created the space for them to feel like they could at least try. I mean, that's all I was asking, just try. I know it's scary. And hopefully this space that we've created is like a little less scary. So, you know, I know that it's possible, and I know that the art helped make it possible.
So do you think that because it was in more of an artistic setting versus like maybe, I don't know, some sort of typical meeting setting, that people felt more relaxed and disarmed?
Yeah, absolutely. The art is definitely a disarming tool. It serves many purposes. It disarms. In some respects, it starts to help show different perspectives. The artists in every large dinner we did, the artists who were in the exhibits, they were always at the dinners. So I would always, you know, kind of place them spread them out at all the tables. So you could actually talk to the artists, you know, directly. Just the art and artists served many purposes.
That makes sense too. I always quote from this book, but one of the books that I really like is Drawing on the Right Side of Your Brain. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she mentioned in there is about how, even though she was talking about artists, as you're learning how to draw better and all those things, that you have better big picture thinking, better at big picture thinking, and also realizing that there are gray areas. And that's something too that I really like what you're describing and talking about, because I think even if you're not, you know, maybe an artist yourself, just being in that setting and participating in that art, maybe yes. It also helps that being open to the gray areas.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you've totally hit it spot on. I mean, that's part of the problem with polarization today, is like, we see everything as either this or that. And we've just decided that you're either with us or you're against us, and nobody sees the gray areas. So absolutely, we've got to like, it's a word that gets bantied about a lot these days, but nuance.
So I wanted to ask you, I read an article, I think it was some years ago. It was about an artist that lived in your apartment in a bubble. Tell us about that experience. How was that? And how did that impact you and impact the artist?
That was, once again, one of the most life-defining moments of my life. I don't know if she would call herself a performance artist. I don't know what she would call herself, conceptual artist, whatever. But basically, through a gallery that I have supported in the past, basically an artist named Agnes Bolt was going to have a show at a gallery here in town that I had a relationship with. And one of her ideas for a show was to build a giant plastic bubble inside of somebody's home and live in it with the collector and sort of explore the relationship between artist and collector through this experience. And so the gallery was looking for somebody who would host her. I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Like, you know, and so this is another way in which art, I feel, is such a powerful tool in people's lives, is it helps at least it has helped me push myself beyond my comfort levels into exploring like very weird things. So basically she came and built this, well, she like prefabricated this bubble, but in pieces. So she came and built this bubble and off we went to live together. She established all these rules of engagement that were very strict. You know, for example, I had to cook her two meals a day, which it was very reasonable, but she was very particular about what she ate. And like, she's a vegetarian and like, I love meat. So I was like, oh, like, I don't know how to, you know, how am I going to do this? And in fact, she like complained about the meals that I cooked at one point, which I thought was like a little, you know, come on. But I think that was part of the, that was part of the experience is like, you know, the power dynamic between her as artist and me as collector, was really important to figure out. Anyway, there's lots of like little details that I would, you know, we can totally go into, but I think that the thing that I kind of, one of the overarching things that I got out of that experience and other experiences like that, that I have pursued, put myself into before then and since then, is that we've got to push ourselves. Like we've got to like have these, like have these experiences that are unlike anything else we've ever done. How else are we going to improve? How else can we grow if we don't place ourselves in these very uncomfortable positions? And I think like most of us kind of know that, but we don't really do that. And so in a way, I have pursued stuff like that and been very vocal and public about those experiences to show not only that, one, you're not gonna, nothing bad's gonna happen from doing it. You know, nothing, it's not, you're not gonna, nothing's, it's not gonna hurt you or you're not gonna die, but also to hopefully convey how much I have grown from it and hopefully inspire others to do the same.
Yeah, I find that so beautiful because it's as though basically what it seems like to me is that you're asking the audience to think about things from a different perspective. To get away from the rhetoric, right? Yes. And that's really beautiful because for so long, I think we got into a discussion about finance earlier and things like that as well, especially when it comes to the art world. There does need to be a change, and a change is coming, whether or not we realize it or not, you know? So
yes.
Now tell us a little bit about the Art is Fear blog.
Well, you know, one of the ways that I kind of escaped the law world was I started blogging way back in the day when like blogs were kind of more of a thing, you know, like we're like a I had a WordPress blog back in the whole way back. And, you know, it was just a way to sort of talk to people that I didn't know basically and say, hey, here's my experience of arts in DC. And I'm just sharing with that. And that's, and turns out that other, and people wanted to hear about what was happening around DC in the arts. So anyway, it's just early on, the blogging was a way for me to transition from a law career into to becoming more of an art person, was because I think blogging is great because then that way you can just kind of talk directly to your audience. And I think that's actually why social media is really great too. It's, and why the art world has to change, because people can talk more directly to the audience now. We don't have to go through third parties like a gallery or a museum. I think it's great. I'm not saying galleries and museums should go away, but I think there's more space to be had for all of us to have a voice. But anyway, so more recently, I renamed my blog Art is Fear, because I think about art as a way of dealing with my fears, you know, my fears about who I am and my sort of doubts about myself and about the world and what I'm scared about in the world and what I'm scared about for others and how others are being treated. Like, art is a way I deal with all of those fears. And so, and how I write, and I deal with it also through my writing. It's our therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that is. I was thinking as you were talking, I mean, there is art for art's sake that exists and that helps us to explore. But I really love how you're talking about how it's an important tool too. Like, the reason why it affects us is because, you know, like you were talking about, it helps us build relationships, have conversations maybe we wouldn't normally have. And now you're talking about how it's helping you, and you're helping others even overcome their fears with that, which is really beautiful.
Yeah. It's art. Art has so many possibilities. Like we've gone through so many of the possibilities in this one conversation.
For sure. Now, are there any future endeavors that you would like to tell our audience about?
Oh, well, I mean, like I said, the Looking for America project will keep going. And, you know, one of the goals is to figure out how to have more of these conversations, encourage others to have these conversations without me always being at the center of organizing. So we're trying to create sort of a model, basically, that will hopefully inspire others to initiate the conversations themselves. It's really hard. I mean, there are actually a lot of organizations doing, you know, bridge building and depolarization. And this is the challenge for everyone, is people will come to the conversations if somebody else organizes it, but we need everybody to be initiating, not just me or, you know, the people, like a few people organizing.
Yeah, I like that. Bridging conversations. Mm-hmm. I love that. I can't wait to listen in to some of these talks that you're going to be having. And no doubt, audience, once again, in the show's notes, just look down below and you'll get a chance to get linked in to some of Philippa's beautiful work that she's able to organize and coordinate. Well, where can our listeners connect with you?
I'm on all the channels. I'm very easy to find because I love social media. So I love connecting with people that way, because I do think that, you know, social media can be used for evil, but it can be used for good. Like, I feel like I've connected with people that I just never would have normally connected with that way. And I've actually had some great conversations that way. So I would love to connect with people through either Facebook or Instagram. I'm trying to get better about the Twitters, and I'm just not as good at that right now.
Yeah, I'm finding that each one has its own agenda, you know. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Yes.
You know, Philippa, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Not only just being in your presence, you know, we can see that you're such a wonderful person, but really just hearing about some of the projects that you worked on, the impact that you're having, not only in just DC, but it sounds like across the country. You know, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really love the vibe of your show. It's just like so easy to just go, you know, talk about inspiration and like just positive things. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for being here.
There were so many gems from this discussion with Philippa that I enjoyed. One of the things was hearing her love and her passion about hearing things from the artist's perspective or their mind, really getting into the mind of the artist. And I enjoyed hearing about her Artist Fear blog as well, because here, despite whatever is going on in DC, she mentioned that people really wanted to hear about what was going on in the art world in DC. And I found that such a treat, because she's actually using art as a tool to help people to understand things from a different perspective. She mentioned when she was in law school, one of the things that they taught her as a lawyer was to find a problem, then create a solution. So it was so interesting hearing things from a lawyer's perspective.
Exactly, and definitely see that in how she approaches her art. I also enjoyed how she mentioned how art can help us overcome our fears and how she uses that as a tool. Also how she mentioned that being around art can kind of make you feel uncomfortable, which helps you grow as a person. And we definitely see that in the way she sculpts those events as a social sculptor. And I really like the fact too, towards the end, when she mentioned that she didn't want to have to be the person to always put together those events, but she's hoping that those people leave from the events, or maybe even those of us who are watching or listening to it virtually, will be willing to have those events on our own
Yeah, that was such a really interesting discussion with Philippa. And, you know, hearing things from her legal perspective, seeing how a lawyer thinks, I found that really fascinating. But we want to thank you, audience. This has been a really interesting year, to say the least, in 2020 going into 2021. This will conclude season one of Vessel Art as a Doorway. And we want to thank you once again for listening in to each episode. If you really like this podcast and you want to share it with your friends, feel free to do so. And if you could, please leave a review on any of the podcast players that you're using, whether it be Apple, Google Play, or even Spotify. And if you'd like to hang out with us a little bit more, you can find Leah on Instagram at Leah Smithson Art and myself at Just Glaze Channing, and our website at CLSS.studio. That's class without an A dot studio. But thank you so much again, and thank you for being a part of Vessel Art as a Doorway.